answering this question. If you put your mind to it,
you can accomplish anything.
Hey, right. If you give it your best,
then you've given it your all. Well, if you do your best, you obviously give it your all.
If you give it your best, there's nothing you can't accomplish, right? Something like that. If you believe in yourself,
others will believe in you.
You can do anything.
But
you can do anything.
Okay. Basically, that they're all basically the same kind of idea, the same kind of concept. Don't we hear that a lot? Those statements. Anybody ever played ball on a team? Softball, basketball, some kind of sport. Been in some kind of a, you know, even at work, any type of thing in. That you're trying to accomplish or whatever, and people are trying to give you encouragement. That's the basic statements that are made. You can't. There's nothing that you can't accomplish without, you know, you give it hard work. You give it the best that you can give it. You can achieve anything if you put your mind to it. There's nothing that you can't accomplish. Well, he talks about that concept in this book as being one of the attitudes that has maybe hindered us in our discipleship, hindered us in our faith, hindered us in our walk with God, that we have convinced ourselves that basically on our own we can accomplish anything. That if I'll just give it the best effort, if I'll just do the best that I can do, use the God-given talents that God has given me, then I can accomplish anything. And so we sort of convince ourselves, not even knowing it, that I might even need God. If I can accomplish everything, if I put my mind to it, if I put my heart, my soul, my spirit into it, then what in the world do I need God for? Now, we would never actually say that, and we would never probably ever actually admit that, but I've been thinking about that this week, and I've been struggling with that this week as I was thinking about this and studying for this. I'm getting myself totally confused, and I know that's not difficult to believe, but I'm actually reading, I've actually read his next book, and I'm reading the next book after that. He's got a book called Radical Together, and it's a book that is similar to this, but it talks about the practicality of the things that he talks about in here. This is more individual. He talks about it more as the collective, more as a body. And then his next book is called Follow Me, and it's talking about some very detailed attitudes about, you know, following Jesus, being his disciple, following his footsteps. But as I've been looking at these different concepts, and I've been thinking about this, it's becoming more and more of a struggle for me to think about that I think I've bought into that concept. I think about, let's go a little further, and then we'll get into some more discussion on that. Here's the truth. The truth is, there are some things that we just simply cannot do on our own. Do we believe that? There are some things we simply cannot do on our own. I don't care how much of my mind I put to it. I don't care how much of effort I give. I don't care how much of the best that I can put into something. There are just certain things I cannot accomplish on my own. And it's when I come to that realization is when I actually start accomplishing things. I was, Kelsey's playing softball right now. And the other, it was a couple games ago, she was playing. She got to hit. And right now she's a freshman. She didn't get to play very much, but she was in the game. And they put her in toward the end, and she got an at bat. And she's in the box. Of course, you know me, trying to help coach her. You know, we've been working on her hitting, trying to get her to follow through, and you know, and use her legs and her swing and all that. Well, she's up there, and the girl is a great pitch right down the middle. And Kelsey she swings away at it, and it's just all arms. She hits, and she didn't even really swing and didn't really get her body into it. And it goes to the fence almost. And what would have happened if she had used all of the power that she had within her, all of the ability that she had, if she had utilized all that she had in order to accomplish that? It would have, maybe out of the park, who knows? And I think that's sometimes what we do in our own life. We limit ourselves to what we can accomplish on our own. And when we realize that there are certain things I can't do, there are certain things that I cannot accomplish without God's help, without His power in my life, that's when I realize, and that's when I start actually being able to accomplish things. We limit not only ourselves, but in turn, we limit God. Because we don't open ourselves up to Him and allow Him to come into to our life, and we don't use His power. A couple of verses that I want us to think about. Matthew 19, verse 26. Anybody know what that verse says? Top of your head? I'll give you the first part of it. With man, this is not possible. But with God, all things are possible. Matthew 19:26. And in this particular instance, he's talking specifically about salvation. I think we've actually touched on this verse a couple of times already, that he's talking about the idea of the wealthy being able to get into heaven. And he talks about how difficult it is. And what does he compare it to? Okay, a camel through the eye of a needle. It says, big old camel, little old eye of a needle. Now, fit it through. Well, obviously, Jesus, that's impossible. And Jesus' response to them and they said, well, then if that's the case, then who can be saved? And Jesus' response was, well, with men, it's not possible. But with God, all things are possible. In other words, we look at it and we see that it cannot be accomplished. Our salvation is what he's talking about in this sense. And I think that's something that we, at least in our mind, come to an understanding that I know that I cannot save myself. Although, we continue to try. That's something that I cannot accomplish on my own. And we understand that only through Christ and only through His work can we be saved. Only through God's grace and His mercy. But carry that further. Carry that to other areas of our life. That there are things that with men, they are impossible. But with God, all things are possible. Now I want us to look at Ephesians 5, verse 20. And we're just going to barely touch this verse right now. We are going to come back to it. Ephesians 3, 20, sorry. Ephesians 3, verse 20. Because we're going to come back to this verse in a couple minutes and pick up the context. Because it is very, it has a lot of depth to it that sometimes I don't think that we really look at. Somebody want to read Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20?
Now to Him who is able to do more abundantly than all that we ask or think, according to the power that is work within us, to Him be the glory. Oh, sorry, this is 21.
That's fine. Go ahead. You read that.
Okay. To Him be the glory in the church and Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen.
Okay. So, what does this verse say to us? What does it say to you in the context of what we're talking about? If I wanted to accomplish something in my life, don't I have to know that I'm going to accomplish it? Isn't the number one goal of accomplishing something, setting a goal to reach it? Wouldn't you say? We want to reach some milestone at work. Well, I don't just accidentally stumble upon it most of the time. What have I done? I set a goal that I'm going to reach in my own personal life, whatever it is. The number one step usually is you set a goal and you say, this is what I, and you then you constantly focus on reaching that goal, right? God says, Paul says right here, that there are things that God can do that we can't even think about. He says they are beyond our understanding and our thinking. He says they're beyond something that we can even ask for. How can you ask for something that you can't think of? So here I try my best in my spiritual life to accomplish things for God and do things that He wants me to do. But He says there are things that God wants us to do, that God can accomplish for us through His power, that I can't even think of, that I can't even comprehend or understand. So then how do I accomplish those things? Those are the things that I believe are referred to in the passage we just talked about as those things which are possible with God and impossible with man. There are certain things we cannot do. We cannot accomplish on our own. And so what do we typically do with those? We avoid it. Or we don't seek to reach the things that we cannot understand or accomplish. What does it make me feel like when I'm looking at things that are so big that I know that they're too impossible for me? It makes me feel like an idiot. Like a moron. Like I'm a weakling. I'm powerless. And so, most of the time, what do? We avoid those things. We don't even want to go into that realm. And so I'll stay with the things that I can comprehend and understand. And what does that say for us? What does that mean to us?
We don't put faith in God.
That's true.
Limits.
What have we not accomplished? I don't know, do you? I mean, I don't know what I haven't accomplished. I haven't put myself out there enough to try to figure out what those things are or try to allow God to work through me in those ways that I can't understand.
Well, it also limits our faith. If we can only understand and do the things that we can grasp, the whole concept of faith will never get. Because that's putting your trust and belief in something you can't comprehend. You can't do. And if you're going to limit yourself to those things you understand or can do, you'll never grasp that whole concept of faith, which is believing in what can't be seen. So we actually say we want to live by faith, but everything we do says we're not. We're precluding that possibility because we're going to limit ourselves to what we understand.
See, I always look at it like the people that do those miracles, that they like, there's no way that I can lift that car off that person. Or I was able to do this impossible task that was set in front of me without some other being, like, you know, a mother taking, you know, an SUV and flipping it over, you know, off of somebody or one of her children or something, you know. Something that if you would have got her in the same situation, you know, just to test out that she could even flip it over, she couldn't do it. And it's just like impossible for her to do. Yet somehow she did it.
Not necessarily, though. Could that be explained? How?
Adrenaline,
right? It can be physically explained. I understand what you're saying. I definitely understand what you're talking about. But that could definitely be physically, and maybe it's a terrible explanation, but it could definitely be explained away. But what about those spiritual tasks? And that's really what we're talking about. That's really what we're focused on. We're not talking about our jobs, and we're not talking about physical feats, and we're not talking about miracles and those sorts of things. What we're talking about is the spiritual life that God has given us. Yeah.
I'm sure four years ago or so, your dad, when he replied to a guy that he didn't know on an email that lived in India, he had no imagination of what that was going to lead to. But because he replied to it, you know, look how much has been accomplished. Look how much he's been over there. He's they've been over here. The church there is really growing in several way, in many ways. Healing Hands is involved in digging wells, and I'm sure when he replied to this guy, he didn't know. No, he said, "I got this email from the guy. I didn't even know." You know, that he had no idea or he did not imagine the possibility, but God did.
And that happens to us a lot. But what about those? What about those untapped possibilities? Think about this for a minute. God uses our weaknesses to show His strength. God uses the impossible to prove His power. And this is one of the statements from the book. God delights in exalting our inabilities. God delights in exalting our inabilities. See, we think of it the opposite, don't we? God's given me certain talents and abilities, and I've got to use those to the fullest. And then God's going to exalt my abilities. But that's not the truth. God wants to use us in our inability. Think about some of these people in the Bible. Think about Moses in Egypt. Why did he choose Moses? I don't know about you, but if I needed a task done and I went to Moses, he said, "Oh, I'm terrible, I can't do it." No, that's not the guy you're going to ask to do the job, is it? You hire a guy to come do some work in your house, and, "Well, I'm terrible at drywall, and I'm horrible at..." Well, come on in, you know? No, get out of here. Find somebody who is confident in their abilities. That's the guy that I want to use.
If you make me angry, I might kill you.
Make me angry, yeah, exactly. David and Goliath. Why did he choose David to go against Goliath?
Because there was no possible way that David could have won. Without God's aid, David would have been murdered.
It only glorified God more that David was a scrawny kid. It only glorified God more that David had no experience in hand-to-hand combat. That he had no ability to do it on his own. It only glorified God more. People looked at David and they knew David did not accomplish that on his own. What about, I think about different stories like Joshua at Jericho. What about, I mean, that was a fantastic battle plan, wasn't it? So what are we going to do, God? You know, he's got this fantastic plan all worked out. Tell me what we're going to do. Tell me how we're going to go into the city. We're going to do it. Okay, let you know you're going to walk around the city. Why? Because God showed His power through it. Something that was impossible. You don't knock down a city by walking around it. Although, you watch some of these ancient stories of the Bible, or ancient explanations of miracles of the Bible, and they say that, well, the constant walking of a million people around the city, the foot traffic caused the earth to shift, and they go, yeah, that's stupid, right? That's not what happened. God wanted to show everybody that the impossible could be done through Him, and Him only. What if they had marched six times around the city of the last day instead of seven? Wouldn't have fallen down, right? Because it had nothing to do with how many times you walk around the city. If you walk seven, then it will fall down. I mean, that's just a known fact, right? No, it's because that's what God said. And He wanted to show that it's impossible, something impossible could happen through a method like that. Somebody like Gideon, who had 300 guys against the whole army. That was a great battle plan too, wasn't it? And that goes down in, I'm sure you look up in great battle plans of the world. I'm sure that's in there, right?
Taught at West Point.
300 guys against the whole army. You just take some trumpets and lamps and you got it covered. Shouldn't work, you know? But it did, because that was the whole point of it. Think about I'm going to mention a couple of people in the Old Testament that we look to that you would think could have accomplished great things because of their ability. The first one I think of King Saul. Why was he chosen as king? Why did Samuel choose him? I think God was teaching Samuel a lesson as well. But why was he chosen?
He was
He's a big guy.
Okay. He was an imposing figure, right? 6'4", I don't know. Real muscular, probably. What else? Handsome, good looking, right? Had a lot of appeal to him. What else? Tremendous warrior. He was not a wimp. He was a tremendous warrior, proven warrior. He fit the bill. His ability should have allowed him to accomplish anything that God put in his for him to do. Walking down the street, and there were, wow, that he just looked like a king. What a guy. What was his problem? He had more than one problem, but
he was self-absorbed.
Alright? It was all about him. And his abilities. Right? I should be able to accomplish this just because I'm Saul, just because I'm who I am. And everybody told him that's who he was. Wow, you're so great, and you're all this, and you know. Instead, God chooses exactly the opposite to be his king. That's the one he really wanted. The one who was willing to humble himself and did not look the part, did not fit the bill. Everybody looked at him and they're like, you're kidding. He walks out on the battlefield against Goliath and everybody just chuckles. Who is this kid? Now, David did become a tremendous warrior, and he did become all the things that Saul was and more. But it was because he realized he could not do it without God. And when he tried to do it without God, he fell into the same traps that Saul fell into. When you think about Samson, I want you to close your eyes and think Samson. What do you think immediately? Okay. I think Jerry. Long hair. It's probably a little longer, Jerry. You automatically picture a muscular guy. I was watching the Bible show. Y'all seen any of that? Jerry's out on that. Wow. Some of it is just... They just put it together weird, some of it. Y'all watch any of it? Like the story of Samson? The facts that they put in there... It's just odd the way that they arrange them. They don't make them. I don't know. It's very strange. I was actually watching it and I had my Bible out. You have to flip like over two, three, or four chapters, you know, in one scene. Like, whoa, they skipped a whole bunch, you know. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But the dude in that show is kind of how I picture Samson. Big old 6'2", 6'3" guy. He's just got arms the size of trees, you know, and everybody walks around. Is that the way Samson was, do you think? Does the Bible ever describe him as muscular? Not that I know of. I looked. I didn't see it. You know, it's very possible that Samson might have been Nick's size. very athletically built, but more on the skinny side. Believe me, I wish I had your ability. More on the skinny side, right? When you think of Samson, do you think of Nick?
I do now.
You do now?
I mean, wasn't the whole point that he couldn't do it without God? The moment that he had his hair cut, he lost all his strength. If he was a big, muscular guy, the fact that he was bound with a few ropes shouldn't have been that big an issue. So he probably was a real slim guy.
Could have been. But why do we automatically think that he was muscular?
That's how we see people.
His power would have had to come from his muscles, right? But see, that's not the case. Probably the more the reality is, he was probably just a normal-sized guy. Whose abilities came from his obedience to God, and who was given those things. The impossible part of it was that he was kicking the Philistine's tail all over the country. And it wasn't because he was muscular. He didn't go home at night and bench press, you know, 400 pounds. I'm going to be stronger tomorrow. That's not what he came from. He didn't accomplish it because of his own abilities, right? God put him in that position, and he was able to do that because It was supposed to be something that was impossible. People were looking at him and they say, you know, how can you accomplish this? Sitting there with Delilah and she's thinking, how are you so strong? I mean, I'm looking at your arms. You're not any bigger than any other guys. So what is it? Finally, stupidly, he tells her, right, that it's his hair. Last much yet, growing long hair does not make you strong.
And it wouldn't have been a secret if he was huge and muscular like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, they wouldn't have told her to go to him and figure out what the secret of his strength was. It would have been obvious if he had huge muscles. So he probably wasn't a particularly imposing guy.
Yeah, you want to go up to the Hulk Hogan and say, dude, why are you so strong?
What's interesting to me is, you know, just asking all these questions, and every time that he would give her an answer, all of a sudden that's what would happen. You know, it's that she was, you know, he said, you know, whatever this was, and then it would happen. You would think, hey, obviously I need to start thinking about somebody's trying to take what I said that was my source, my strength, and get rid of it. Because it happened several times. And finally, so obviously he wasn't smart either.
Okay, so what was Samson's issue? Samson's issue was the same issue as Saul's. He started thinking that it was about him. Yeah, you can cut my hair all you want to, but you're not going to do anything. Well, that was the whole reason he was strong. Maybe he did. Maybe it is possible. He got into his head, and maybe he did start working out. And he did start getting muscular. He did start thinking, oh, it's all about me. It's all about my own abilities. But when he got the attitude, started to think that it was his own abilities that was allowing him to accomplish the things that he was accomplishing, that's when God could no longer use him. And to me, that's a scary thought. Because until I come to the realization that the real important things I can't do on my own, and I need God's help, and I try to receive His help, His power in my life, He can't really use me.
It's interesting, too, you mentioned Gideon. If you read the beginning of that story, it's interesting that they had that huge army, you know, where they were supposed to take the Midianites, and God said, no, you can't bring an army that big, because if you do, it won't appear as if it's, it won't be me. He goes, they'll say, oh, you took us over because you have this huge army. He goes, we need to cut it down. So they'll know that it's my power and not yours. I don't, you know, he's saying Israel was going to say that. Israel was going to boast in itself if they brought a huge army. He said, you have to do it with as few men as possible, so they'll know it was me.
Yeah, and you look at story after story after story, especially in the Old Testament, and it's that same thing, right? That God wants, he can only prove His power and His ability that it's Him, it's His accomplishment, when it's something that we cannot accomplish on our own. And one of the things He talks about is a statement that He makes in the book is, we get caught up in the idea that our plans, our means and our methods for accomplishing things in our personal lives and also in our churches, more than anything, we have convinced ourselves that they mean anything apart from God in His power, as if it's all up to us. As if it's all up to us. I'm sorry, but we on our own, We can do some great things. We really can. But we cannot accomplish what God really intends for us to accomplish without His help. Because the things that He has asked us to do are impossible without His help. So I can't accomplish them without Him.
That's one thing that always strikes me in the book of Judges. If you read about each one of these judges that come and save Israel, and they delight in the Lord, and then immediately the next chapter starts, and there arose a generation that did not know God. Because they stopped forgetting that it was Him who saved them,
wrong, though.
Because anytime we think we can do it, that's when we get in trouble.
Well, and look to it, the language of some of the guys in the Old Testament, such as David and Joshua, some of the guys that we consider as the most faithful men and our examples. What do they always say? The battle belongs to the Lord. I can't win this battle. Joshua and Caleb go into Canaan. The other 10 guys go into Canaan. They come out with two totally different stories.
See the same things.
Saw the exact same things. Those guys are big. And then one of them's analysis was, we can't do it. Joshua's analysis was what? I know that. Not without God. And I think sometimes I'm one of the 10. I go into a situation and I go into something that I believe that I'm supposed to be trying to accomplish. And this is just too big. This is impossible. It's something that I cannot deal with. That I cannot handle. You ever said, well, I'm just no good at that. I can't do whatever it is. I'm just no good at that. It's not my strength. I can't do it. You know, when we have that attitude, when we say that, that's exactly who God's looking for. He's not looking for the people that have all the tremendous ability. I'm not saying that they're not used as well, but I'm saying that's what I say when I see things that I think cannot be accomplished by me. Well, I can't spread the gospel to anybody because, you know, it's just not my strength. I just can't. I can't overcome certain thing in my life. It's just not me. I just can't do that. And we use that as we go through those excuses in all sorts of things in our life, as a church family, but also in our individual lives. I can't put aside my own wants and desires. I can't live on a lot less than I make. I can't. All those things that we were talking about, those abandonment things, the things that we have to put aside in our life, that we have to have a different attitude about. But it's only when I come to the realization that I can't do it is when God can actually use me. And that's what I'm coming to. That's one of the things that I'm coming to the conclusion of. Flip back over to Ephesians. We're gonna look at this passage real quickly. Ephesians chapter 3. And I want to go back to verse 8. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 8. And I want you to, this is your homework assignment, Jerry. I know you're not good at doing homework, but
I'm good at reading it.
Well, I know. Take a look at this passage again. This afternoon or tonight or tomorrow. Just take a look at this passage and go back to the beginning of chapter 3 and look at it in its total context. It says in verse 8. This grace was given to me, the least of all the saints, to proclaim to the Gentiles the incalculable riches of the Messiah, to shed light for all about the administration of the mystery hidden for the ages in God who created all things. This is so that God's multifaceted wisdom may now be made known through the church, to the rulers and authorities in the heavens. This is according to the purpose of the ages in which he made the Messiah, Jesus our Lord, in whom we have boldness, access, and confidence through faith in him. So then I ask you not to be discouraged over my afflictions on your behalf, for they are for your glory. Paul says, listen, I know what my job is. I know what I'm supposed to accomplish. What was his job? What was his purpose in life?
Gentile.
Says to reveal God's riches to the Gentiles. And he says, this is so that God's wisdom may now be made known through the church. Because I understand what my purpose is. It's to open people's eyes to God and His power and His love. Alright, now go to verse 14. For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named. So he said, now I'm going to pray for you. So what are you going to pray about, Paul? What are you going to tell? What are you going to ask God on my behalf? He says, I pray that He may grant you, according to the riches of His glory, to be strengthened with power through His Spirit in the inner man, and that the Messiah may dwell in your hearts through faith. I pray that you, being rooted and firmly established in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the length, width, height, and depth of God's love, and to know the Messiah's love that surpasses knowledge, so that you may be filled with the fullness of God. That's just an awesome, you can't even start to talk about that passage. It's got so much in it. So what does he pray for? What does he say?
To be strengthened, but grounded in love. The rooted and grounded in love is something that really stuck up to me.
Okay, but let me see if this is anywhere near on track. He says, through God's power, okay, we understand, we just talked about, that there are certain things that without God's power and His strength in our inner man, we cannot accomplish. What does He say that He wants us to be able to do?
To grasp that.
To understand God. To understand God, His wisdom, His mercy, His grace, His love. And then be able to turn around and to share in some comprehensible way that love with everybody else. There's no possible way that I can explain God's love in a comprehensible way to someone else unless I have at least a little bit of an understanding myself. So he says, you, through God's love, through God's power, which is the only way it's possible, is it possible to understand the length, the width, the height, and the depth of God's love? Is that possible? Not on our own. Then he goes to verse 20. Now to Him who is able to do above and beyond all that we ask or think. How am I going to accomplish this? I read this and it's like, come on, really? That is not even possible, Paul. You really want me to understand the height, the width, the depth, every facet of God's love? How is that even possible? And then Paul throws in, well, this is God. He can do anything above everything that we ask or even think. Then he says, according to the power that is working in you. This is what we're going to pick up next week. What is it talking about? I mean, how do we tap into this power that he's talking about here? That helps me and helps me to accomplish the impossible. That's where I want us to kind of head next week. Okay?
What?
Did you see the burning bush explained?
No, I missed that one.